But then we label it as if it has some breakouts or it has some wrinkles or it has some inflammation, we then call it, you know, being problem skin, whereas perhaps the problem isn't the skin.
Emma, we are so excited that you're here. I don't know if you see yourself this way, but Fallon and I kind of see you as this Aussie spearheader of peat-inspired nutrition. And I know that you've been in practice for over 15 years now. And I would love to hear, I mean, we would all love to hear just your own personal health journey, how you found Ray Peat and how you kind of integrated it into your practice and just your whole story.
Thank you. And thanks for having me. It's very kind. Gosh, I probably came across his work initially, I think 2011. I'd been there, done that with, you know, most dietary kind of ideas, as I'm sure you all have. I trained in nutrition originally, did some Chinese medicine, been down every rabbit hole probably since I was 9. I got a little bit obsessed and interested in food and nutrition and found it fascinating. And having, you know, been there, done that, and probably learned the hard way that certain things weren't working for me, or noticing profound changes in my clients, I think I just got back from New York and I'd been working with experts in the field of probably cleansing and juicing and all that sort of realm, that fun stuff. And I remember just getting home feeling like it just still didn't sit well with me, and I wasn't physically thriving from it. And there was one particular question that kept coming back to mind, and I thought, you know, I've tried more the, I suppose back then, the paleo approach, although it wasn't, called paleo back then. I don't know what it was called, but we've done all those sort of realms and macrobiotic phases and more vegetarian. Then here I was pretty much concentrating on a vegetable-centric diet. And, you know, in the health food realm, the vegetables are touted as the be-all and end-all. And realizing even then that I wasn't noticing profound health changes in myself. If anything, I probably was failing to thrive. And I literally Googled the question, who defined health food? Or who decided vegetables were healthy? I can't remember the exact question, but Ray's article popped up, the one that I'm sure you've read.
Yes.
One of his very original ones. You know, who defines food? All about vegetables. And this article popped up and I'd never heard of him. And I start reading the article, and literally I can still picture myself sitting there on the floor reading this article, and it was like fireworks going off in my head, going, this makes more sense than anything I've come across, any lecturer I've been in, any guru I've spoken to. And, you know, that night I sat there plowing through articles and didn't sleep. And from that day on, everything kind of shifted. But it was this clarity, but it ignited something in me that, I don't know, maybe it just tapped into my basic common sense. It just made sense. But then it was that awkward predicament of how do I shift what I'm doing and change my how I frame things to clients, as you know, I'm sure you've been through too, when you're touting a certain message and all of a sudden you go, oh god, I don't think that makes sense anymore. So having to kind of reframe things, but gradually just implementing these ideas with my clients, all of a sudden I saw people getting better and feeling better, and these awesome success stories were coming through, and it was far more satisfying for me as a practitioner and for me personally in my own sort of health knowledge. It was really pretty profound. And then of course I wanted to eat it all up and understand everything in a second, and was digging out who's already doing this, who already knows this stuff, where can I learn this from at another level. I found Danny Roddy, who's become a good friend and, you know, someone I can download with. Rob Turner, his knowledge is phenomenal if you know functional performance systems. He put me on to Dodie Anderson, who I then spent a few years working closely with, and we put together client handouts together and dug into topics together. She connected me directly with Ray. You know, and shared a lot of knowledge with Georgie Dinkov as well. So, yeah, it just opened up this sort of whole new paradigm for me, and I've been, lucky to work closely with a lot of these amazing people who've been you know, doing this longer than I have. So yeah, that was probably 2011. And then from there on, everything changed with how I started practicing. But it really just made me kind of stop and question this whole nutrition realm that we're all in and how we get fixated on these ideas. But when you see it in its entirety, you start to come back to, oh my goodness, I think my great grandmother already knew this stuff. And I wish I'd paid more attention back then and not gone and chopped out whole food groups and gone so extreme. Perhaps it shouldn't need to be as complicated as we've all made it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think so many of us that find, you know, people like Dr. Pete and this idea of bioavailability, it's like, sometimes it gives us a bit of offense. Honestly, I think I was kind of in that camp that I was so proud of the restrictions. And I first was a little bit offended, but once you really think about it, like you said, it's like, this makes so much sense. And it makes so much more sense than what I've been doing in terms of the restriction and diet hopping. And I love that about this, that when you really dive into the concept of what your body thrives on, it just makes sense. And I think that's beautiful. And we're so excited to talk about skin health today. We just consider you the go-to for skin health. And so I'd love for you to introduce, I mean, yeah, you're putting out just fantastic work, and we know that you've been studying this for a long time. And so I would love for you to introduce our audience to this concept of our skin health being a reflection of, you know, what our internal state is currently doing in terms of hormones and our metabolism. You know, can you talk us through how our skin really is kind of a window into our inner health?
Yeah, 100%. It's a complete reflection of what's going on the inside. I think we should start to see that as the body communicating to us like super intelligently. It's telling us truths of what is going on more deeply that we can't, you know, already see. It's giving us the red flags. And that in itself makes you wonder why here we are, you know, if there is a skin concern or our skin's imperfect, and perhaps already it is perfect, it's doing its job, but we want it to look even more perfect or look a certain way, which really isn't its function. Its function is to, you know, keep our internals in, and you know, it's a protective barrier, but we want it to look a certain way based on what, you know, the media tells us it should. But then we label it as if it has some breakouts or it has some wrinkles or it has some inflammation, we then call it, you know, being problem skin, whereas perhaps the problem isn't the skin. The problem is something deeper. So just by finding some kind of immediate topical solution, we're missing out on that, I suppose, that opportunity of addressing something more deeply. And if we just see it look better on the outside, but we haven't addressed those deeper issues, what's that going to lead to down the track? So I think we should perhaps be grateful to our skin when it's communicating to us and not just be frustrated with it and look for the next treatment or the next really sort of aggressive skin therapy we should be going to, or expensive, you know, topical, you know, retinol or something. It's more about, yeah, look, if things on the inside were functioning optimally and perfectly and in harmony, this probably wouldn't be going on the outside. And it is definitely something that there are certainly things we can do topically that help assist it. But I think if we don't address the internal first, we're missing out, and it's probably going to lead to something, you know, far more sinister.
That is profound. I feel like the connection you're making is this concept of innate wisdom, like our bodies having this innate wisdom to communicate. And when we cut off the communication and just blame the skin, that's just, you beautifully painted that picture for us. And kind of going in like chronological order of, you know, picturing ourselves like growing up as young women or being in high school or middle school, I feel like the first maybe skin complaint, quote unquote, that we have is maybe acne. So like we go through puberty, maybe we start suffering with hormonal acne. I know I suffered with that a little bit as a younger girl, but it just came out way more whenever I was suffering with endometriosis and estrogen dominance. And I would love for us to discuss the root of acne. You know, is skin mapping helpful in this conversation, or is it usually always some form of like estrogen and endotoxin overload?
yeah, it can be one of those things or all of those things completely. I dug into this in an article you'll find on my blog if you want to see a real visual trying to piece things together. But I think a lot of the time it can come, be more rooted from SIBO or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth is very much a trigger. And whether that in itself is caused by being, you know, having a low metabolism, having perhaps lowered stomach acid, constipation, and then you get this backlog and the bacterial overgrowth that occurs from that. Then I suppose from there it would become the excessive endotoxin issue, the nitric oxide, the serotonin, which puts that burden on the liver. Then you get this increased cortisol, the increased estrogen, and this inflammation, and end result being a pimple. So again, you know, you don't just want to find that product that's going to get rid of the pimple. You want to go, oh, thank you, body, for speaking to me. What's going on deeply that we can address that shouldn't even need to occur? But I think a big part of the connection when it comes to that, those teenage years and why it more often than not starts to occur right then is, you know, you do get these shifts in hormones, but if it's not supported by, you know, optimal levels of vitamin A as a core building block of our youthful steroid hormones, you can't manufacture those steroid hormones. And then you end up in this more stressed state. Again, the cortisol pushing up the estrogen, and you get this estrogen overload, which suppresses the progesterone, suppresses the thyroid, and then this vicious cycle comes from there. And sadly, you know, ready to go bioavailable vitamin A is just something that's just generally lacking in our diets these days. We're not eating, you know, all the cream and the butter and the eggs and the liver and the offal. It's just not something that's popular anymore. You know, it's got a stigma attached, I suppose. And most people are cutting out the dairy and they wouldn't even think of touching liver. Mm-hmm. So to get that load of vitamin A to literally build, you need vitamin A, you need cholesterol, and you need active T3 to build your pregnenolone, to make enough progesterone, to make enough DHEA. And without the basic building blocks, you can't. So you get into this state through teenage years and these shifts occurring, then you don't have enough vitamin A, and then you get this the keratinization that can occur from that when you get excess shedding of skin cells, and then you get these skin cells flaking off more quickly and not, I suppose, doing their function for as long as they could be, and then you get these flaky skin cells plugging pores, and you get the excess inflammation going on again from that deeper pathway we're talking about, and that combination leads definitely to, you know, congested and blocked and inflamed and spotty skin. So again, you just consider how we approach it these days is a bit concerning. We, you know, the really aggressive topical creams and things, we're in them inside the body screaming out for help and probably for some more nourishment, but it's tricky if people don't want to eat these kinds of foods.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's a before and after. I don't think it's a course student, but I think she just is an Instagram follower. There's a before and after save to my skin highlight. And it's just a girl that talked about how she just went from, I think she was more of like a plant predominant diet, and then she incorporated eggs, raw dairy, liver, and you see the before and after of her skin. And it is remarkable. I mean, just that she was suffering with acne before, and it's just insane how powerful foods can be.
Mm. Oh, it is. And it's a shame that we've lost that respect of those foods, and it really can be that simple. But I suppose if you're in a paradigm where you see being vegetarian or vegan is what you're fixated on, you know, the only way for people to perhaps get relief might be through synthetic, you know, vitamin A supplementation or topicals. But again, what's that going to lead to down the track if that's not really addressed at that deeper level?
Mm-hmm. Emma, do you have any thoughts on acne types? So, you know, cystic versus blackheads versus full-blown pimple. Do you feel like it all comes back to the same root, or is there kind of a different reason that our body's expressing something like that under the skin acne versus the, you know, the visible? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I used to have a bit of a breakdown, which I sort of would tend to go by, but I find myself not really reflecting on that so much anymore. Mm-hmm. I just sort of see if the problem skin's there, let's look for other symptoms and let's mm-hmm. start addressing what's going on. But I would say the more deep-rooted pustule stuff is perhaps more going to be hormonal. But I think it depends. And I see women in their 40s with different kinds of breakouts, but often it correlates with different kinds of symptoms. And I don't think there's one set rule. I've sort of moved away from creating those straightforward lists where everything categorizes so neatly. But I don't know. What's your take on those differences from what you...
Sure. I mean, I personally don't really have a take, and that's why I'm curious to ask, because I think that people tend to try to put it into a box, you know, that certain acne expressions, and even, you know, Corey mentioned face mapping. I think there's this tendency to want to categorize our information and categorize our skin problems and say, oh, X leads to Y. And I think that you're spot on that it may not be a specific answer. There might be something that our body's trying to tell us, again, maybe hormonally, if we're seeing a lot of that deep-rooted acne come up. But I was just curious if you had any specific thoughts.
I was very much like that, even as a practitioner going way back. I'd like to create neat charts and categorize everything, and if we can fill it in neatly, then we've got all the solutions right there. And then another client comes along, it just doesn't fit into your little neat pathways. It's really frustrating.
I mean, I think that's our tendency to want to put things into boxes. Really? And I think the truth is they just, they can't always do that. You know, our health can't really fit into a box.
No. Well, even from my time, and I started, you know, going down the path of Chinese medicine originally, and I love the philosophies and I love what I learned on that topic. And they've got obviously some very old wisdom right there. But, you know, there was a bit of talk of that sort of, you know, face mapping you talk of, or looking to meridians and where things are popping up and what perhaps it's leading to. And I'm certainly not the expert on that stuff, but I think what I was lacking when I was studying that topic in itself was the food element, because very much all of it was, do you want to specialize in acupuncture or herbs? Mm-hmm. And there was part of me just going, I'm not sure if I want to specialize in either. To me, it was, if we're malnourished and we're not getting the fundamental building blocks in the first place, how much acupuncture and herbs can kind of band-aid the situation if there is, like we're talking about vitamin A, if there's chronic vitamin A deficiency, those things won't address that. I mean, they'll help perhaps and they'll mask things for a time, but in the end, you'll still have a vitamin A deficiency. Mm-hmm. And I remember having this conversation with my lecturer at the time. And he kind of nodded and he went, you're right, that's not really being addressed. So I went across and did sort of the nutrition arm. But I figure if you then eat really well and meet those needs, perhaps those add-ons, the acupuncture, the herbal medicine, the other things, could be an awesome add-on from there. Mm-hmm. But my thing was just, we've got to eat the food first. And I, you know, from what I could see around me, no one was eating A, enough food, or B, really digestible, nutrient dense food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really so important that we are evaluating that nutrition piece before we try to add on all of these extras. And I think in the same vein as acne, I think another conversation that people don't often trace back to nutrition is the topic of dry skin, wherever that falls on the body, you know, heels, face, skin. And it's interesting. I think Corey and I both possibly shared this recently. It was just a gal who had dove into healing her metabolism, and she shared a before and after of her heels and how dry and cracked they were before and how just soft and wonderful her skin looks now. And I just had people that were astounded that that was connected to your metabolic health. They just had absolutely no idea. I mean, I've always viewed dry skin until probably the past couple of years as a purely topical approach, that, you know, the internal nutrition didn't really apply to that. So I guess kind of the same question applying to dry skin is acne. How do we support that from the inside?
Well, if you consider that when we talk about keratinization, when you get the, you know, the eventual shedding off or flaking off of the dead skin cells, which I don't even think we should call them dead skin cells, because they serve a purpose, that whole layer. And to call it dead is a bit negative, really. They have a function. But once they start to loosen and flake away, that's what we call that stage, estrogen promotes that happening. It means your cells don't stay around for as long. They don't serve their purpose for as long, and they start flaking. You know, it accelerates that whole process. Whereas vitamin A does the opposite. it helps you retain those cells for longer, so they serve a purpose for longer, and then they don't flake quite as readily. So mm-hmm. it sort of slows that down, but it keeps the skin intact and keeps the skin strong, I suppose. So yeah, when you're looking at any that sort of flakiness and that dryness that's quite visible and gets quite irritating, then again, it would come back to that same thing. And you guys would, you know, I'm sure harp on plenty about the issues of estrogen dominance and how it's affecting most women these days. And it's just it's a common thing.
So the reason I love we were talking about this is I feel like this concept perfectly sums up our tendency to look for a quick fix for things. And even when I posted about my melasma journey in reversing most of my melasma, some of it is still lingering around. I'm still like working through it. But whenever I posted about it, I was so interested to see the messages that I got, because they were like, okay, I don't really want to, basically saying like, I don't really want to do all this, but give me like the top three tips I can do like right now. And I'm like, well, it's so much bigger than that. You know, it's such a bigger picture. And, you know, I just mentioned melasma and I would actually love to talk about that, but what would you say are kind of like some of the underlying reasons that melasma, age spots, and hyperpigmentation, you know, start to manifest on the face or the skin in general? I mean, I guess the full body.
Yeah. In a nutshell. Yeah. Well, I sort of categorize lipofuscin in general and those age spots slightly different to melasma when you get that real kind of grouping of the pigment. And it tends to be, as you know, what sections of the face. For some people, it's kind of shoulders and that upper region. Whereas the age spots can turn up on the face and back of the hands, and it looks slightly different. But yeah, similar issues going on. But that those age spots in particular being that result of PUFA and iron specifically, and estrogen really accelerates that formation of the lipofuscin, definitely, and the estrogen connection with melasma, absolutely. But again, you know, if we saw these as really helpful signals from the body going, oh, there's something going on deeper, and those age spots on the back of your hand that might be annoying and not aesthetically pleasing, they're happening on all your organs. So you might want to do something about that. And everywhere that that's happening, those cells aren't generating oxygen the way that, you know, or they're not functioning the way they should be. So it's an aging process which we want to slow down, and we want to make sure that systemically is being addressed. So again, if we just took some topical to try and melt that away, still going on all over your organs, and it's still aging you systemically. So it's, yeah, again, that annoying, I suppose people see that as, oh, I don't want to have to do the work and everything, but don't you want to do the work? Like, don't you want to try and preserve your organism better and know the tricks that, yeah, it won't be overnight, certainly, but over time, you're only going to be functioning better and preventing other things down the track. So I know that whole mindset, the inconvenience of it all, is a hard one to help people see from a different perspective and, you know, see the opportunities instead.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I know that, and to share my own personal experience with melasma again, the worst my melasma ever got was actually whenever I was using cast iron pans, and it was kind of my introduction into the iron overload piece. And so, you know, if you're listening and you're suffering with melasma and maybe you're new to the podcast, I think diving into iron, and we'll actually link some resources. Do you have a blog post on melasma, Emma?
Yeah, I've got probably, of my blog articles, probably three in particular are very specific to skin, and one on aging skin and things like melasma. So yeah, I can send you those links.
Fantastic. Okay. So we'll link that. And yeah, so mineral balancing, healing my metabolism, like it was not even remotely a quick fix. It actually took a few years for me to see significant progress with.
Oh, well, that's actually good in terms of time scale. And that's, think of, because you addressed it that way, think of what else it might have done for your body, and you might have noticed other symptoms improve too.
Exactly.
Mm. Absolutely.
So we did get to touch on the internal nourishment piece for our skin. Would you let us know what you think about, you know, how do our topical products actually affect our skin? What, you know, what percentage of the puzzle is that? How do our topical products, you know, long-term and short-term, affect our skin?
So in terms of negative effects, positive
Sure, both, everything.
So this has been the dive we've been going down these last couple of years since, you know, Kitty very well, since she and I embarked on this crazy journey. And it hasn't been easy because none of the manufacturers want to make products devoid of all those easy fillers and emulsifiers and things, but we stuck to our guns. But it's pretty fascinating. I think the general perception of skin when people go and buy their face creams and their makeups and whatnot is that it's just this impermeable barrier. We can just throw things at it and just fixes that level, and it's got nothing to do with the rest of our body and it doesn't actually go in. But yeah, there's a lot of conclusive evidence that what we rub into our skin, particularly our body moisturizer, you know, on such a large surface area, you know, a decent percentage is going to make it into your bloodstream or get stuck in tissue literally, and it doesn't go. So we've got to be super cautious of the ingredients we decide to slather on our skin and what we're going to carry around from that. And you guys being mums as well, you know, what you're going to slather on your kids after they've been in the bath and they've got such beautiful soft skin, it's going to suck everything up. It's not going anywhere else. So as far as the general ingredients being, we've got to make sure that they're non-toxic and they don't have negative effects, but the fatty acid component being super important. So here we are trying to, you know, do all this work with our diets and eliminate or really lessen the poofers we take in, the polyunsaturated fatty acids, which aren't stable like saturated fats are. And this is what triggered us to do what we're doing, because Kitty and I would educate our clients to the nth degree of just, you know, eradicating these vegetable oils from their pantries and checking for them in their packaged goods and things like that. But it was the clients who come back to us and say, now I've pretty much eradicated from my diet, or I've brought it down, you know, to as minimal as possible, and I'm really aware and conscious of these oils, but I've realized that, hang on a second, my Nivea body lotion that I'm slathering all over my body every morning after a hot shower when your pores are open and you know, sucking everything in, the oils don't look so good. Is that going to contribute to my poofer load? And it's like, well, yeah, it will. So the more people would ask us, you know, what would you recommend, put on topically, and we'll say, well, you could literally just grab your coconut oil and use that, but that often gets slimy and messy, and, you know, middle of winter, you're hacking it off with your carving knife and it doesn't work so well. Facial products, body products, you start to become aware of these things are in most of the products out there. And although skincare is such a massive industry and there's so many products out there, we found very few that we felt 100% good about, if any. So getting back to your question, it's sort of, what was your question again? Remind me.
Yeah, just talking about how much do topical products affect our skin? You know, are they actually providing relief? Are they, you know, how much of the puzzle piece are they in terms of our skin health?
Good question. And I think this is important too, because I think we don't give the skin the respect we should. Like, I think this is why I deliberately didn't even call our face cream a moisturizer, because when the skin is healthy and it's provided the building blocks and the nutrients and everything internally is in a good place, your skin moisturizes itself. Your skin exfoliates itself. Your skin has these incredible functions. It's far more intelligent than anything we could throw at it. And sometimes we come in there with our seven-step routine or whatnot and all these other procedures, and it's like we're really undermining the capabilities the skin already has. And instead of, you know, I didn't want to call our product a moisturizer because I want it to be something quite minimal that's there to help support the moisture levels or help retain the moisture levels, but not to undermine the fact that skin already should moisturize. Mm-hmm. And what else can we take internally to support that too? And that comes back to, you know, perhaps the collagens and the other things that we can eat and do more of as well from the inside. But as far as the good things we could put on our skin, there are certain substances that have legit studies that show that, you know, applied locally, they do have an effect on skin cell. They do support what the skin can already do. One major ingredient we were hell-bent on getting, and it was very hard to get as an ingredient, was cholesterol. Ooh. Derived from lemon, from sheep wool. But it's just the isolated cholesterol, because it's one of the most definitive ways of assessing how healthy the skin is or how youthful the skin is, because mm-hmm. youthful skin within the cells carries a lot of cholesterol, and that tends to function very well and look more youthful. The older the skin is within the cells and within every cell of our body, cholesterol levels go right down. So even if it's higher in bloodstream, it's generally lower in the cell. And it has been found that applying saturated fat directly, being a precursor to making cholesterol, supports that. And also direct cholesterol as an ingredient makes a big difference as well. So in terms of those add-ons and those actives, we only wanted to put in things that had legitimate, you know, I suppose purpose for applying locally. There's a lot of kind of trendy ingredients, I suppose, that are popping up in certain skincare products. They sound great, but there's no evidence that they do anything locally whatsoever. You might be something you're better off eating, if anything. It can make a very big difference, but I still wouldn't want to overwhelm skin. It'd just be something you do minimally and, I suppose, respectfully of the skin's sort of natural turnover as well. And not to be too aggressive with the skin. The skin should shed its own pace. And as we said, if it's shedding too quickly and you're getting this sort of flakiness, address the cause from the inside first as well, as opposed to just stripping the skin and throwing more acids at it and trying to, you know, get those layers move more quickly, and then we tend to thin the skin. Am I going in circles?
No, it was wonderful.
And I'm, you know, Fallon and I.
It is a huge topic, and this is something that we're trying to piece together, kind of summaries of these things for the mm-hmm. website as well. A recent conversation I had with Georgia Dinkov as well on this topic goes into this quite deeply, but yeah, it's fascinating. There's actually a woman who I had some really good conversations with a couple of years ago who really shifted my perception on skin as well. She's in Malaysia. What's her name? Salma. Fascinating. And she comes from that whole paradigm of very minimal skin intervention and doing less rather than more. And when you start to do less, you start to see the skin actually function on its own better. And just it's more about supporting the skin, as opposed to feeling that we need to care for it, we need to work it. The skin should actually work. And for me, it was this transition of having gone from, I don't know, 3 or 4 layers or steps I was doing to my skin every day, twice a day, and noticing my skin didn't seem that happy. And when I really pulled back and did much less and focused a lot more on things like touch and massage and things like this, and of course, sleep and enough natural light and all these other things that we tend to forget about as well. My skin just was profoundly different, so much better. And I always put it back to that example of when I look at my children's skin, you know, where they've never had soap on their bodies. They've never washed their face as such. There's no detergents have touched them. They don't even need moisturizers. You know, they've got the most perfect skin. Mm-hmm. And you go, your skin, should it really be that dependent on anything really, if things are functioning well? And obviously, you know, if they've been out in the sun, they've got a bit of a tingle or they're a bit dry or a bit scathed, I put products on there, but I'm very selective, as you would be, on what you rub into their skin. But you start to realize that if we just do just enough to support it and help resurrect the skin barrier with some of these substances, then that's all we should, you know, probably do, and not particularly detergents that strip those incredible natural moisturizing factors that the skin makes itself. I even look at my husband's skin and he doesn't do anything, and men tend to not really do what we do, and you kind of go, wow, your skin looks really good.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking the same thing about my own husband today. I was sitting across from him at lunch and I'm like, your skin's perfect. You don't even do anything for it. You just like exist. Yeah.
And maybe we shouldn't trample on it so much and think we're so damn clever and we're going to just sort of emulate what skin can do. And so we strip it all back and then we've got to stick things back on again. It's like, well, maybe we shouldn't strip it so much back in the first place. Like even the kind of cleanser we made, it's super simple, but it's more what I suppose you call it an oil cleanser, which I wasn't even sure about initially, the whole concept of cleansing with oil. But the more I tried it, the more I realized if you do it correctly, your skin will feel clean. There's no grit and gunk on it from the day. And, you know, girls, we have to remove if we have a little bit of makeup or something. But it's nice to feel clean without being stripped, you know, and that sort of really leached, parched feeling. Mm-hmm. And it's a much nicer feeling. And then you don't need so much, you know, extra help beyond that with your oils, and just help, I suppose, work with your skin, not try and be cleverer than the skin or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I love going back to, I mean, all of this really encompasses my, I'm reflecting on my own experience with my skin and Fallon as well, because we'll like send pictures of our faces to each other from like years ago and just be like, what in the world? Like I looked like this at some point. I mean, just for me back in my bodybuilding days, I basically had a zero, almost like nearly zero cholesterol diet. Like I did egg whites, you know, lean chicken, green smoothies, and pupas. That was basically my diet.
Do you miss it?
Say it again.
Do you miss that diet?
Not even a little bit. I mean, how did I survive? I don't know. But I was miserable. I was so miserable. But my skin in particular was almost like grayish in color. It was just so colorless, so thin, so like just saggy and dead. I mean, it just looked dead. And so that's one thing that Fallon and I reflect back on a lot, is just like, look how much life is in your skin. I mean, I tell that to Fallon all the time, but Fallon, I'm curious if that's been your, if basically when you look back on your skin at its, in the past, was it very little cholesterol in your diet as well?
Oh, for sure. Well, you know, even during my paleo days, when I would have been probably incorporating, you know, the grass-fed beef, I couldn't do eggs for the longest time, actually. That was a really big food sensitivity of mine. Obviously, no dairy. I wasn't consuming liver regularly. So it was probably pretty minimal. And yeah, I look back and it looks lifeless. It looks, like you said, very gray. My coloring is so much different now. It's really just wild to compare the before and after of just having those nutritional foundations. It's like, my eyes were just sunken in, and oh my gosh, it looks like a different face, honestly. And Corey and I have talked about my face in particular. And Corey has probably mentioned this too. It looks very like masculine to me. When I look back, it's like that buoyancy was not present in my skin for the longest time when I didn't have that nutrition foundation. So the proof is in the pudding, right? Or the proof is in the skin. Just looking back at pictures, it's just wildly different. And Emma, I want to hear more about this. You touched on that you used to have this, like, you know, 7-step skin routine, and now you've really simplified. Whether you share specific products or not, I know sometimes it can be more helpful really not to share specific products, but what does your routine look like now that you feel like you've simplified and stopped attacking your skin so much?
Yeah. Yeah, my routine never got that complex, because I'm not very diligent at anything that's complicated, you know, especially, you know, as being a mum and you go, whatever. Mm-hmm. But when I would do things, I would do what, you know, I was told or what was meant to be good. And you get these great sort of particularly exfoliants and acids and whatnot. And maybe it works for some people, but just didn't really work for me. But these days, now that we finally have our hands on our own product, which is almost ready to launch, thank God, it's been a while, I'm literally cleansing in the evening, as I said, a simple oil cleanser, smallest amount of our sort of face cream we put together after that on moist skin. Mornings I rarely even cleanse, actually. Mm-hmm. Sort of learning to what, well, now that for me personally, hormonally, touch wood, I'm in a good place, and what I've done for myself over the last 10, 15 years, think, you know, shifting the food I've been eating to, I've noticed everything sort of calmer, so that's addressed. So I can get away with just a small amount of the face cream. And the mornings I'm not needing to cleanse, because I'm not making excessive amounts of oil, but just enough. And you start to appreciate, you know, that stuff on the skin in the morning, and you just feel that slight coating. It's almost a bit waxy. That's really good stuff. You know, if it's not excessive and your skin's not in a inflamed, congested state, just that little bit of that waxy stuff, those beautiful natural moisturizing factors your skin's manufactured, you know, if anything else, push that around the face, and then maybe a little bit of face cream on drier areas, but not much more than that. And I'm really just cleansing off if I've put a touch of makeup on. That's about it. But I must say I'm generally using my red light pretty frequently. That's a good one.
Love it.
Very nice.
Yeah, red light's fantastic. Look, sleep's a big thing, but I must say I'm naughty with my sleep because my kids don't go to sleep till late. And then those hours after they're asleep are so precious and quiet. And I want to get some work done. And then at midnight, it's 1 a.m. I'm thinking, oh, you know, I tell my clients, get to bed before midnight. And here I am, you know. So those nights when you get a bit too late, you know, it's the next morning, you don't look quite so sprightly. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, sleep is a sleep beyond everything, really. And if you can get good quality, heavy, uninterrupted sleep, then that's an absolute, makes a big difference to skin. So not much more than that, really.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I'm curious. So like when you've had obviously these positive changes in your skin over time, and I'm curious with working with clients or people in the metabolic community, is it a common thing for sometimes skin to get worse as, have you seen like a, in the realm of estrogen dumping or, you know, estrogen coming out of our tissues, is this a common theme that you've seen, is skin will get worse before it gets better? And why does that happen on a physiological level?
Yeah, look, that can be the case. I don't see it every time. If I'm working with a client who were extracting the things that were promoting the estrogen and perhaps bringing in vitamin E, bringing in natural progesterone compounds, things like that, some of them just adjust fine and just see nothing but positive from then on. But there's definitely that percentage of women who notice that, you know, as you know, the old stored estrogen being dredged back up from the tissue, back in the bloodstream, having to be excreted. And that can come with some negative side effects or uncomfortable side effects to start with. Sometimes on the skin, absolutely. But when you consider that estrogen itself, if that is literally applied directly to the skin, that literally stimulates production of cortisol, you know, at the skin level too. Wow. And basically, cortisol in itself accelerates aging, you know, of all tissue, but skin, you'll see that haggard look. So basically the lower the cortisol levels systemically or within the skin cells as well, the younger you're going to look. So if there has been that, I suppose it's a good term, dumping of estrogen, then they might perhaps look a little aged before things start to resurrect. And then they overcome the estrogen, overcome that, those excessive cortisol levels perhaps. Another thing might be once you start doing the things to encourage a high metabolic rate, you're going to eat through your nutrient stores much more readily, much more quickly. So you almost have to become more committed to eating more nutritious foods as your metabolic rate increases. Otherwise, once you start ripping through perhaps, for example, your vitamin A stores much more readily, you're going to look as though you're vitamin A deficient. And that, again, comes with issues specifically in regards to, you know, acne and breakouts as well. So I guess like anything, you don't want to try and make changes too aggressively overnight, all of a sudden. Perhaps be kind to your body and make the changes gradually, because then you're going to be able to manage things along the way and not fall into these sort of relative deficiency states as well. So yeah, going slowly, absolutely, but making sure that you've got those fundamental things to back you as you know, push yourself forward, and committing to, you know, like the egg yolks and the liver and the oysters and those things that come so loaded with nutrients. Because yeah, like I said, it should almost be that thing that, okay, I'm here and I'm trying to elevate my metabolic rate, which everyone's sort of aspiring towards, but you have to be committed to eating more frequently, getting more calories in general, and getting the nutrients in to back that.
That's a great point. That actually happened to me anecdotally after I was working to increase my metabolic rate, was doing that for a couple, or I guess 3 years before getting pregnant the second time, and started having symptoms of vitamin A deficiency. So I just had to raise it even more. And number one, when you're going through pregnancy and postpartum, you do need more vitamin A in those periods. So it makes perfect sense why you might need to up them, you know, in certain seasons or just across the board, your body might show up. So that's the cool thing about healing not being linear, because your body's always going to be communicating symptoms with you. And getting to a place where we can tune in based on our understanding of human physiology is just such a beautiful journey. And I really appreciate that perspective.
Yeah, I was definitely one of the...
That's what you go through. Oh, sorry.
No, continue, Emma. Go ahead.
Oh, no, but that's the whole thing too. When you go through pregnancy and then you're postpartum and you might be nursing, it's just not... It's not really ingrained in women that, okay, you're pregnant, you need more calories, you need more nutrients. Okay, now you're breastfeeding, you need even more calories and even more nutrients. Whereas the general, you know, thought out there is that, okay, well, you've spat out a baby and now you've got to do the post-baby diet and pull on back. And on top of that, mom's sleep deprived and got no spare hands to feed herself and she's just being drained, literally. And not only can that show up in the skin, you like might look a bit more haggard, but, you know, postnatal depression, I mean, that's got to be correlated, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yes.
I was kind of backtracking a bit. I just was going to say, I was definitely in that percentage of women who did experience the big sort of, you know, quote, estrogen dump a few months in, and it showed up on my face. And so I feel like that's it. Just every time I hear another woman talk about this, or they see my story and hear, they're like, thank you for talking, because I think a lot of women feel like, I'm doing something wrong. My skin is reflecting, you know, my internal state, and my skin is freaking out and what's going on. And I think for a lot of us that did really have that heavy PUFA consumption for so long, you know, I was on the paleo AIP diet for probably 5 years, eating so much, you know, nut butter and nut milk and anything to replace dairy. And you could see it on my skin as it was starting to leave my tissue and leave my body at about, it's something about that like 3 to 6 month mark for women is when it can show up. And, you know, looking back at pictures from that time, it did get bad for a little bit, honestly. And you could, you know, I know we touched on face mapping a little bit and how it's not exactly an end all be all, but I had it in that chin and jaw area where you typically see the hormonal. I mean, it was like this, half circle around my face that you could just see the estrogen coming through my skin. And it was tough to power through, honestly. I think that piece of it can really make women want to stop and run. And I feel like because I'm on the other side, I can say, don't, please don't, like, stick it out. You will get to the other side. Obviously, you know, I don't have perfect skin today, but it's drastically different. It's so drastically different than it was in that season when I was doing so much estrogen dumping. And I do love what you said, Emma, earlier in the episode about treating our skin as just a messenger, that it's, you know, if we do have a breakout or something come up, it's not something to attack or, you know, fix right away. It's just a sign from our body that we need some extra support. And I love that you said that, because I think so many symptoms, acne included, we can just take it and turn it into the next problem to solve. And, you know, maybe it is that in a small sense, but the greater thing is that our body is very kindly communicating to us that, you know, I need some help. I need some extra nutrients. I need some support. So yeah, I guess, you know, I would ask both of you, what would you advise a woman in that state of getting worse before they got better? You know, I remember just really diving into the carrot salad faithfully and the adrenal cocktails faithfully and the liver faithfully. And I just remember thinking, like, what else can I do? What else can I do to support this transition? And I'm curious if either of you have anything to add on to that, because I feel like a lot of our listeners are still newish and they're still in that phase of feeling like, what's going on with my skin right now? You know, it's supposed to be this beautiful, vibrant, glowing skin, and I've got all this acne, and what's going on?
I mean, I would say the first thing that comes to my mind is supporting the liver and, you know, simple things to support. Number one, like liver detox. So obviously getting enough protein in, you know, making sure you're getting like at least 100 grams of animal protein, and maybe doing, I feel like someone has a recipe for a liver detox drink, but I'm forgetting who it is right now, but you can actually Google it. If you Google like liver detox drink, I know that Organic Olivia has a great liver tincture that you can put inside. There's also another one from what's a brand you can think of for a liver tincture, like to support liver detox.
I literally own another brand's and I cannot remember what it is.
maybe I'll link Organic Olivia so you guys just have that on hand. But yeah, supporting liver, castor oil packs are great to support the liver, and yeah, just really and also I mean, you mentioned the raw carrot salad, so I just think, yeah, being like religious about that. And Emma, do you have anything you would add to that?
Yeah, we'll definitely support the liver and disinfect the entire intestine. So whether it be carrot salad, you can do the bamboo, you can do cooked mushrooms. Cooked mushrooms are particularly good because they're going to help stop the overproduction of estrogen at the source too. So they're really powerful, but they've got to be really well cooked. And other little methods with disinfecting intestines too. You can do things with charcoal, even making little tablets with charcoal in coconut oil. That you can solidify those, because have a look at my article, my blog related to acne. But basically, the body loves coconut oil, but it can really absorb it quite high up in the intestine. Whereas when you combine it with the charcoal, it pulls it down further. Basically, it has its disinfecting abilities and antifungal qualities that will be carried further down towards the bowel, which is good. You can couple the carrot salad perhaps with a bit of aspirin, which is also a good disinfectant through the intestine. So there's sort of clever methods of making sure that everything's addressed right through. But yeah, doing that on a daily basis, you know, ideally on an empty stomach when it has that ability to really sweep through. And then at the other end, making sure that we're not constipated. And, you know, surprisingly, it's something that, you know, you ask clients, if constipation is an issue, and they'll tend to say no, and you say, how many bowel motions do you get? You know, and they'll say one every 2 or 3 days. I'm like, well, that is constipation.
Right.
So we should be having at least one really gigantic, fabulous bowel emptying daily. That should feel euphoric. And if that's not happening, whatever you can do to make sure that that does happen. And as far as bowel assistance goes, I would recommend very well aged cascara over other more sort of aggressive laxatives, which can be quite irritating to the bowel smooth muscle. Mm-hmm. So making sure that, yeah, not only are we collecting things within and, you know, dredging out what's in the liver, but making sure that stuff literally exits the body. Mm-hmm. And there's such, you know, for some people, it can just be addressing that constipation and they just see their skin relieved. Wow. For others, it's more about, yeah, what's ingrained in the tissue that we have to really dredge out. And that's a long process. But apart from that, just make sure that, you know, what's actually coming out the other end. And don't we get so fixated on, you know, what's on our plate and how perfect it is and how, you know, the macronutrients are balanced and the nutrients are there and that's all great. But we don't stop and look, you know, what's actually getting out the other end and does it all add up and what's getting stuck along the way. And anything can become quite toxic if it's left to sit around and putrefy in the system. So got to make sure both ends are working. And then, again, looking at the actual cause of perhaps the constipation, rather than just trying to, like, assist it all the time, going, why isn't the body doing it itself? That usually comes back to metabolic health, thyroid health, perhaps needing more magnesium, you know, address your minerals. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's all important. But if we, you know, continually clean out what's systemically being, you know, accumulated on the inside, and then free up the liver too. There isn't that backlog, so the liver can actually, you know, help in contributing to actually manufacturing steroid hormones as well. Yeah.
You know, I feel like that actually applies to kids and babies as well. I feel like what is coupled together with maybe eczema, baby acne, maybe even cradle cap is also slow, you know, a bowel movement only one or like every couple days. I know, again, anecdotally with my son, he used to have a lot of constipation issues as a baby. And now, like, having bowel movements, you know, 2 to 3 times a day that are just like, sorry, Koa, if you're listening at some point today, I'm so sorry. the most like wonderful bowel movements. And it's such a, it's honestly like such a joy as a mom, like to know that that part of him is functioning so well because it affects so much in not being able to be like, you know, clogged up in there. So, but I feel like that applies to babies and kids as well, not just adults.
Absolutely. And how much better do you feel all over when you've had a fantastic bowel motion? Kids too, when they get cranky, maybe they're just bound up and in pain and your brain isn't clear until that's, you know, emptied out. And,
exactly.
You know, they're nicer to be around too.
Let's move over to, just to wrap it up, just to some of the frequently asked questions that we got from our audience whenever we announced that you were coming on. I'm actually very curious about this myself because I have not looked into a lot into it, but I'm wondering if you've ever looked into rosacea and the root cause of rosacea. I've heard gut as opposed to, I mean, it could be all encompassing. So like maybe a gut bacterial overgrowth, maybe the SIBO thing in combination with the estrogen dominance. The interesting thing is when I used to look into rosacea, there was a combo of birth control pills and antibiotics equaling rosacea in many, many people that I've known personally. And so it makes me think, okay, is there an iron, estrogen, and gut thing all happening there? And yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts open-ended on that.
Those people with rosacea, I'd want to sort of check on what's their bowel frequency, definitely. And I think that correlation with keeping the bowels clear and how that connects perhaps to endotoxin, perhaps to inflammation. But I'd see it more as an inflammatory condition, but again, address the gut 100%. And probably the state of the intestinal wall perhaps reflects the state, you know, of the skin outwardly. So whether it's being irritated and inflamed, and even just coming back to the simplicity of food being digestible, which is so overlooked in the health realm, don't you think? You know, some of the foods that are most claimed to be the most healthy, when you look at them for what they are, you realize they're the hardest foods to digest. They're usually terribly cellulotic and gritty and grainy and literally physically irritating to the intestinal walls. So if we bring it back to simple foods that are well digested to that person, often that inflammation goes down with it, you know, at that level, but externally as well. So yeah, I'd probably look back to gut health, definitely.
Mm-hmm. We also had quite a few questions just about product use. And, you know, I know you can't give us like a full brand rundown of everything under the sun, but can you talk about, you mentioned some of this in talking about your own skincare line coming out, but can you tell us a little bit more about products that we should look to using on our skin? I know you mentioned, you know, more saturated fats can be beneficial. And then I feel like there's a lot of oils that sort of fall in the in-between that people aren't really sure about. And then, you know, maybe what products or ingredients or even a blanket statement of ingredients, because I know this is a very detailed question, but what should we be looking to use and avoid in our skincare to support our skin?
Yeah, absolutely. So keep the fats, the more saturated, the better, absolutely. I couldn't really even tell you current other brands at the moment, because between having samples of our own product, all I was using was a little coconut oil or fractions of coconut oil to cleanse and to moisturize. It didn't work profoundly well, but it was just something to use out of desperation between having our own product. But generally speaking, until our stuff is out and I can just say, go and have a go, I would just say to look out for, you know, a more simplistic ingredient list, absolutely, and that everything's quite recognizable. When it comes to the body, I'd say simple coconut oil. You could do things like shea butter, although that can be, you know, slow to absorb. On the face, coconut oil, straight coconut oil, is a bit too crude, and for people who are prone to breaking out, that can be quite congestive or comedogenic. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend coconut oil straight on the face, but you can do, I suppose, an MCT oil or something similar like that, because you'll get that saturation, but without the elements that can perhaps congest skin. But other ingredients that are brilliant topically, like I said, cholesterol, niacinamide, profound. And you talk about melasma, nothing better than topical niacinamide and internal niacinamide as well, absolutely. Naringenin and the other bioflavonoids are fantastic. They've been shown to be protective from UV damage and UV exposure as well. Internally, eat your marmalade, because that's also got a protective element for protecting systemically against things like skin cancer as well. I've got another blog article about that, but don't throw out your orange peels. You should cook them up, throw some sugar in and eat them up as well.
I love that.
What other ingredients are some of my favorite? So some people do the vitamin A topically. That can be sort of, it depends what form you use, but it can be sort of problematic for some people, or it can actually irritate them too much. But I would say you know, better than that would be to make sure your vitamin A intake really is up. So again, just come back to the liver and come back to those dairy foods.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you can look out for some of those ingredients in products around, but just caution the other oils in the products. You know, that's going to, no matter how anti-aging some of the sort of highlight ingredients might be, if it's based in polyunsaturated fatty acids, which are prone to degradation with heat, light, and oxygen, and you step outside in the light, and those things are going to accelerate aging cells, it's kind of counterproductive.
Absolutely. Can you also touch on essential oils in skincare? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm cautious. There are a couple of can be okay. It depends on the skin and how sensitive the skin is too. Some can actually be quite estrogenic in their function. So you've got to consider what estrogen does to skin cells as well. So I guess it comes back to that whole rule of just because something's natural doesn't necessarily mean it's good and we should just go overboard with it. I mean, there are chemicals in nature too that have, you know, their concerns. So I'd caution it. I see some people do fine with a little bit of it. I probably wouldn't apply them neat to the skin if you were going to use some. I'd probably dilute them with something else and use them in minute amounts. But I don't, I'd probably try and avoid them, particularly on the face. But there are some, like things like eugenol, which we're using as a core component of our preservative function in our products. It's probably considered more of an old-fashioned ingredient that was used quite readily, even in pharmaceuticals way back, but it's an element from clove or cinnamon. And yeah, not only does it have preservation sort of effects, but also antifungal, antimicrobial. It has other general skin sort of enhancing effects as well. So I guess that's an extract of an essential oil, and that doesn't seem to have any of the estrogenic capabilities either. So I suppose you've got to take them, you know, one at a time and assess what they are. But yeah, I generally speaking, I sort of, wouldn't use them myself too much.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. To wrap up, Emma, can you tell our listeners where they can connect with you online?
Yeah, so my website is just thenutritioncoach.com.au, Australia. On Instagram, I think it's the same, The Nutrition Coach. That's probably the only places you'll find me. I'm no longer on Facebook. I ran away from there.
Yes.
But and then our, for the products that I'm putting out with Kitty, that's on Saturae, SATUREE.com.au, and we're on Instagram as well, Saturae Official. So yeah, then that's where I'll, you know, I sort of plug the research side of things, and with everything we're putting out, you'll see me posting lots about my reasoning for why we've done this or why we put this in. And I'm big on the information and the education. I think it's much more empowering to people not just to be told what to eat, but why perhaps this could be good, and there is no right or wrong way of doing things. It's all contextual, and it's all, I suppose, for everyone to stop and get more connected with themselves, and their body will guide them on what works for them. And yeah, even with skincare, I don't think there's one size fits all, but I think there's things that we could all do generally more of or less of that is going to be more considerate to our skin. So you can find me on those two places.
Perfect. That's wonderful. Emma, thanks so much for coming on. We really enjoyed this discussion. And if you're listening, we will definitely put all of Emma's links, all of the reference links in the show notes. Definitely go find her on Instagram, find her blog. It's just a wealth of information. Emma is just a fantastic person to learn from. We're so glad that you came on today, and we look forward to seeing you guys at the next episode.
I really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Lovely to finally meet you.
So great, Emma. Thank you.